Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
Do you remember your first job? Maybe there was a bit of this. Or perhaps it was this.
Hi guys, linguine? Linguine? No? Aren't you having the linguine?
Whatever it was, how did the boss treat you? Did you get paid cash in hand? And would you have had the guts back then to say something if he or she had underpaid you? Well, wage theft, the underpayment of staff, seems rife these days. You only have to flick through a newspaper or turn on the television to see another story of staff being ripped off, and some of the biggest businesses in the country have coughed to hundreds of millions in underpayments. Woolworths, Qantas, Commonwealth Bank, even your ABC has been caught up in this scandal. So how is this happening and why? And how can we better equip our often vulnerable youth to not only be aware of their rights as workers, but know how to speak up when they're being dudded? And as Dolly Parton said, it does sometimes feel like it's all take and no give. In a moment, we'll hear from Jeremy Thorpe. He's the chief economist with PricewaterhouseCoopers about the extent of this problem. They did a big report into it. And a little later on, you'll also hear from the Fair Work Ombudsman, Sandra Parker, about what you need to do if you, your child or your grandchild get underpaid. But first, let's hear from the mother of a young woman who experienced underpayment. Just tell me a little bit about your daughter recently quit her job due to underpayment. Was this a long time coming? How did it all begin?
Yeah, her experience in the workforce has pretty much been one of exploitation from the first time she started. She got a job in the fast food industry for a small family business when she was 13. And at the time, she was paid $10 an hour, which she was really happy with. But then every year, she would ask for an increase and it wouldn't go up. After a couple of years, I think about 4 years, she was given $11 an hour, to the point where she got to 18 years old and she was still getting $11 an hour. But because she liked working there, it was around the corner, it was convenient. And also, I think a little bit of affecting her confidence. She stayed with this job, and I kept saying to her, like, I think you're being underpaid, like, broach it. And she did a couple of times. She said to the boss there, I've had a look and I should be getting paid more for my age group. And he said, well, if you don't like it, leave. You can get a job somewhere else. So I just think that kind of devaluing and that really did feel powerless. And then it changed hands. And the new people came in and they were like, oh, yeah, we understand that she was underpaid. We're going to do everything by the books, rah, rah, rah. So she was so rapt and she got a little bit of a pay increase. But then the exploitation started creeping in again.
What form did it take then? Similar sort of behaviour?
She was a senior staff member, so she was doing the shop by herself, like the only employee running the entire shop, opening, closing, doing everything. She was also training other junior staff, and she was like the supervisor on her shift, but she was getting paid the absolute lowest rate in her age range. She was required to go to this store and open up if they had tradesmen or delivery, so she was on call constantly going backwards and forwards to the shop because she had a set of keys to open up. Never got paid for any of it. Also had to go and pick up supplies from a supermarket and use her own vehicle and would never get compensated, like never get petrol money for doing any of that. She had to work when she was sick. One time she had like a real severe urinary tract infection and she was in incredible pain and she kept ringing and messaging them saying, well, I don't think I can go, I'm so sick. And they were like, we've got no one else that can do the shift, you have to do it. So she was forced to work like in extreme pain. And that happened a few times. Like another time she had a cold and she was like, I shouldn't go to work because I'm coughing and it's not hygienic. And she was basically told, well, you have no choice, you have to. I can't, you know, there's no one else to replace you. When in actual fact there were three owners of the business and other employees that could have stepped in. They just didn't want to. And, you know, it all came to a head on her 19th birthday. She had requested that night off because she wanted to have a party with friends. And we'd just got back from a holiday as well. And she gets a message saying that she's rostered on that night. It was a Saturday night. And she messaged them back and said, "No, we talked about this. You were both there. We discussed how I had my holiday. I got back the day before and then I was going to take that night off so I could celebrate my birthday." And he just, there was like care, no care whatsoever. It's sort of like, "Well, I've got you rostered on. You're on." And then he just stopped responding to her messages. She kept pleading and there was no response whatsoever. So she did. She went to work on her birthday night, cancelled everything, gets there and he's like, "Oh, what are you doing here? We don't need you tonight." And she was like, "What? Like, you seriously, you cannot, you know, you cannot be serious." And then he was like, "Oh, no, we sent you a message saying you didn't have to come in." So she showed him the phone and went, "There's no message." And she was like, "Show me your phone. Where's the message that you sent me?" There was no message. And then he was like, "Oh, what do you want to do? You can stay if you want or you can just go home." So she went home and she was just so upset. I think it was just the final straw for her. It just sort of broke her. And then I said, "Did you get any holiday pay? Because they're paying you as a permanent part-time employee. Did you notice that you got any holiday pay while we're on our trip?" And she said, "No." So I messaged him about that, and he made up a lie about how, "Oh, yeah, something went wrong with the bank. It should have gone in on Friday." It then went through the next day immediately. They paid some holiday pay for her. But wouldn't have happened had I not messaged him, broached it with him. And then he sort of said, "And I don't have to pay a holiday pay anyway because she doesn't work enough hours really to earn those entitlements." And I was like, "Well, if she's not earning enough hours, not doing enough hours to be permanent part-time, shouldn't she be casual?" And then he went, "Oh, yeah, I think so, and we'll change that next week." So, you know, she should have been paid casual rates the whole time. She didn't get her entitlement. She's quit her job. That was the final straw. She just walked out. She was like, "I'm done. Like, I'm not going to be used and abused anymore." And, so she's left the job.
Where are you at now then in trying to rectify the situation and get what she's entitled to?
So I've contacted the Fair Work Ombudsman and they've sent me some information. I wanted her to do this, but she's so upset and she's quite a vulnerable person. I think a lot of young people, like, you know, she's not very confident. She's had a bad experience in this job. She just wants to put it all behind her and walk away. And I'm like, "But, you know, it's not fair. You shouldn't be used and abused like this. You should take a stand." And she's just sort of like, "No, I just want to forget that whole experience and just move on." But, you know, I'm an angry mum. I'm not going to let it go. I hate seeing what this has done to her. I hate that her only experience of employment has been one of underpayment and exploitation. And I hope that by sharing her story, it resonates with other people who might also be in situations where they feel that they can't stand up for themselves, or even other parents, you know, because there are more teenagers than jobs out there. So that's always been her fear, like, "What if I can't get another job?" My daughter definitely didn't know her rights. And you're absolutely bang on with the power imbalance as well. If she did upset them at any point or do anything wrong, her shifts got cut. So you're talking about a young woman who's on the poverty line anyway with the number of hours and the rate that she's getting, who finds her income is then reduced to absolutely, like, you know, nothing if they don't give her shifts that week or cut her back to one shift. So she was living in this constant fear of, "I need the money. I need whatever money I can get. Try not to rock the boat at all so I don't lose my shift." But at the same time, you know, do one little thing wrong, you know, shifts cut, no money for that week. It kind of feels like that generation grows up just not really knowing about their workers' rights or their entitlements.
And that was the mother of a 19-year-old woman who experienced wage theft or underpayment in a job, not knowing necessarily her rights. The chief economist with PwC, Jeremy Thorpe, is with me. You've done a review, Jeremy, into underpayment of workers. How big a problem is this in Australia?
Good morning. Yes, what we did was we started by looking at data that the Fair Work Ombudsman had undertaken or prepared. What they'd done is audits, quite forensic audits of a number of industries that they thought might have problems. So they were looking at construction, healthcare and social assistance, food services and retail. And what we did was we took the estimated rates of underpayment, in other words, how many people were being underpaid and the degree they were being underpaid and put them all together in a single estimate. And what we found is that in those particular industries, around 21% of people that they were looking at were being underpaid in some form or other. And that's about 13% of the total Australian workforce, which is a large number. And we've estimated that's about $1.35 billion per year in underpayments.
Wow, that's huge.
It's a material number, and it's particularly material when we've been talking about low wages growth domestically for the last couple of years. And so this certainly is one of those factors that has been suppressing wages growth if people haven't been paid what they've been entitled to.
And Jeremy, is there a breakdown in any of that for how many younger workers in their teens and early 20s are caught up compared with the general worker population?
We don't have a direct breakdown of that, but let's look at those sectors. As I think you pointed out before, retail and food services and even social assistance, they tend to be those types of jobs which might be those starting opportunity, the first rung on the career ladder. And so they tend to be disproportionately covered by younger workers. So they're certainly more exposed to this as an issue.
Okay. Now, the other groups that are vulnerable, we heard there from the mother of the 19-year-old woman talking about vulnerability because of the power imbalance. It's pretty obvious stuff. What other groups did your review show are vulnerable, Jeremy?
Sure. I love having an angry mum.
I
thought that was just a lovely phrase. And she pointed out quite rightly there's a power imbalance and there's a vulnerability. And we see certain categories of vulnerability crop up time and time again. One is migrants. New migrants or people here on temporary visas who don't feel a sense of permanency and maybe can be taken advantage of. The young are certainly one of those next categories. The employer might be the sense of doing them a favour. English as a second language crops up where people don't understand their rights in the same type of way. But equally, the nature of the employment might create some vulnerability. So casual, part-time, or people who rely on a lot of overtime, just as your pre-record there highlighted, that group's vulnerable because they don't have that permanency and they are, in a sense, more at risk of having their overtime or their hours reduced if they raise issues. They're the major groups, but we see this as a problem across a whole range of sectors as well.
Jeremy Thorpe, what are some of the common causes that we think are behind this enormous problem?
So I think we need to divide it into two groups. One group is the outright exploitation, and I think that's what we're focused on to start with, and that's unforgivable in the sense that people have entitlements, they should be paid, and if employers are trying to get around that, that's inappropriate. There's another bundle, though, that is not driven by any desire to underpay their workers, but rather it's a problem of error. You might say, how can that possibly be? Organisations, some are very large, and you've already named some large ones that have come forward. And I think that if organisations are coming forward and saying, we've gone back and looked and we got it wrong and we want to correct it, is a sign that most businesses are generally trying to do the right thing. So why do they get it wrong? One of the reasons is the sheer complexity of the industrial relations system. We went through a process of simplifying our industrial relations system about a decade ago. We went from 1,500 instruments down to just over 120 instruments. So we simplified the number of awards that people have, but we didn't actually simplify in any great way the requirements within them. So you can have 10 definitions for what a day is for the purposes of your long service leave, for your annual leave, for your overtime payment, for a myriad of different purposes. And it was easy to get it wrong. And equally, if you get it wrong once, it's likely to continue. So it builds up over time. Magnifying that is a lot of money's been spent on IT systems, but it haven't necessarily meant that we get it right when the IT system's put in. So we've focused on printouts and getting pay slips and doing all that in an efficient manner and maybe not necessarily getting it right as the priority in that space. And another element is I think we've seen a decline in union involvement, or we're seeing growth in sectors where unions are less prevalent. And they were, and still try to be in many cases, the angry mums looking out for the workers. But as union coverage has declined, that degree of support and oversight of providing information maybe has declined as well.
I'm wondering, Jeremy, then, so an underinvestment in payroll systems and processes is an issue. I've seen a number of companies or even government departments that have, you know, coughed to this. That's been something they've highlighted. How widespread would that be?
I think that's been an issue where they've invested and put their faith in, I've got a new IT system. But an IT system is only as good as the people who are running it or and inputting the right data. So garbage in, garbage out. And I think we've been a refocusing as people have seen that IT isn't the answer. It is certainly part of the answer, but we need more vigilance to make sure that the right inputs are being used in it. But you have a small problem in a large organisation in an automated system, that small problem magnifies very quickly across a large workforce and over every pay period. So it's no wonder you build up some of these large numbers where businesses have come forward saying there's hundreds of millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars that they may have been wrong. That's built up over many people over a long period of time.
The complexity of the industrial relations system being a factor, is how valid an excuse is that, or is the onus very much on employers to keep track of this?
Oh, at the end of the day, the onus is on the employers. But the challenge here is that they are struggling to keep up with the sheer complexity and that things change over time. So I want to put a bit more onus back on the legislators. We need to be looking at simplifying the industrial relations system. Now, the challenge with simplification is that means that the old ways and the hard-won fights of the past might need to be re-fought and focus on clarity so that workers can understand their rights and that businesses can understand what they should honestly be paying as well. So there's multiple perspectives that come into this.
I'm wondering, you mentioned some of the industries where we know this is rife. The hospitality is obviously one. What are some of the other areas, the industries where this stuff happens, Jeremy?
So construction is the largest industry that we think is impacted, and it's about $320 million in construction. And that's because of the casual nature of the work or the part-time nature of the work. There's less security in it, so again, there's potentially more vulnerability. We certainly see healthcare and social assistance is a very large component. A lot of overtime issues in that space, a lot of different type of penalty awards. And that's about $220 million in underpayment. Accommodation and food services, which we've already been hearing about food services today, about $190 million. And retail at about $180 million. So again, they tend to be industries with younger people. They tend to be industries where there is less permanence, more casual, more part-time, more overtime, more scope for making error, but equally more vulnerability as well.
And Jeremy, this must present a pretty big risk, I suppose, for business.
Oh, and I think this is what's been exposed by this whole underpayment bubbling up. Businesses and particularly boards or senior management are asking if companies, brand name companies that you would think might have it done it correctly are not doing it correctly and are self-identifying errors, you start to ask questions about your own organisation. So I sit on the board of a not-for-profit and I'm certainly asking the management about, show me that we are paying our staff correctly. I want to see more than just assertions, because there is ultimately a liability on directors in this process. And that's a good exercise. So the publicity that we have seen has generated more care and oversight, and ultimately, I suspect, will identify additional errors in various places, but workers will get paid properly.
All right. Well, I did chat to the Fair Work Ombudsman, Sandra Parker, earlier to try and get, I suppose, some advice. If you are out there, you don't feel like your son or daughter or grandchild is equipped to raise these concerns, what can you do about it? And let's have a listen to that. PwC estimates businesses underpay Australian workers $1.35 billion each year. How accurate is that? And do you have your own estimates on how big a problem this is?
So it's very difficult to estimate the level of underpayment in Australia. The Fair Work Ombudsman, as the workplace regulator, targets specific areas in our regulations. So what that means is that we deliberately go after areas where we know there's non-compliance. So what we do is, rather than do random audits across the country, we look at our intelligence, we talk to the community, we talk to stakeholders, and we kind of hone in on the areas that are already likely to be non-compliant. So we can't put a figure on what the overall level of non-compliance is across the whole community. What we can say is where the hot areas are in those identified areas.
You've just done some of that here in Perth. Your office has had inspectors out targeting cheap eats restaurants and cafes in our popular night spot, Northbridge. What did you find?
So we audited 156 businesses in the fast food, restaurant, cafe sector. And as you say, cheap eat food districts are a target for us. They're areas that are, you know, they're pretty tight margins. They often employ young people, migrant workers, and they're very competitive. So when they want a price cut, they're going to do it in, unfortunately, where there's wages issues. So in terms of where we went to Adelaide, went to Melbourne, Sydney and Perth, and Perth, James Street and Francis Street in Northbridge were our target. What we found in our audit in Adelaide and Northbridge conducted in 27-28 of March were $159,000 of recovery for 231 workers, and we found significant levels of non-compliance, 75% of non-compliance happening in Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney and Perth, and 608 workers requiring back payments across all of those areas. Really disappointing outcome.
Yeah, worse than you would have thought. I mean, they're alarming.
They are alarming, and that's why they're a priority area for us. So many of the breaches come from businesses not understanding their obligations to workers. We don't see that as an excuse, and I would strongly recommend employers invest in workplace law compliance, because the Fair Work Ombudsman is targeting you.
You also enforce the compliance, as you say, you police it. Have you got enough resources to do that well?
So it's a question that that every regulator would say that if they had more resources, they could do more. That's why we work really hard to get our targeting right. And so we can't do everything. We can't be in every workplace in Australia. There's 2 million of them, and we can't possibly be in every workplace. What we do is we really hone in. We respond to requests from assistance from the public. We have our own data, and we talk to the community, and they're the areas we really put our efforts into.
Sandra, how many self-disclosures of underpayment by businesses has your office received this year?
So we've seen an increase in self-reporting of underpayments. We've had over 30 this year, some of those significant, as you're aware, the largest being Woolworths at an estimated $300 million of underspend, and probably higher than that. That's, in some ways, it's a good thing that people are self-disclosing. They're coming forward, they're admitting it, and they're working with us to fix the issue. On the other hand, it's incredibly disappointing, and I've said it's actually shocking in the case of companies like Woolworths that employ more Australians than any other company to be getting it so badly wrong.
Why do you think wage theft, as they call it, or underpayment, is on the rise?
I think the on the rise is because of this self-reporting. So it is that companies are finally taking notice through a whole range of mechanisms, pressure from the community, Hayne Royal Commission saying that they needed to look at their own businesses, changes to the tax arrangements. Companies are being told they need to do audits. They have not been investing in this area, and they should have been investing in this area. And now that they're going to have a look and do an audit, they're finding all sorts of underpayment going on. So I think that's what's going on.
Sandra Parker, have we got any idea of how many young people are victims compared to adults? And is there any evidence, even anecdotal, that it's on the rise for young employees?
So the we do get quite a number of requests for assistance from young people. Again, it's difficult to quantify. Not all people who contact us tell us their age. But from the data we do have, we assisted nearly 2,000 formal disputes involving young people last financial year, and we recovered more than $1.3 million for these workers. So that's around 30% of formal disputes that we completed last year where the complainant told us their age. I suspect it's higher than that, and that's because, as I said, people don't always tell us their age, and they don't need to. But the problem we have is we know young people are some of the most vulnerable to workplace exploitation. They don't have the knowledge and experience when it comes to knowing the rules. They also might be worried about how their boss will react if they raise an issue, or they might even be concerned that they could lose their job. If they're a migrant worker on a visa, they have other concerns. They're concerned about potentially breaching their visa or having an employer, you know, withhold information that will assist them to extend their visa. So they're in a difficult position. What we would like to see them do is to get on our website and get awareness, find out what it is they should be getting paid. We've got excellent resources, including a pay calculator that can tell them what they should be getting paid, tells them exactly what their entitlements are. So if they do their research, then they can go to their employer and show them the evidence. Hopefully this will lead to a positive outcome and they'll get back any lost wages. But if they're not satisfied with how their employer responds, they should call our Fair Work info line on 131394 and we can intervene in disputes. We can help them. We can facilitate a conversation. We can do a whole range of things to assist. And worst case, we can take enforcement action if the employer refuses to pay back the money that they're owed.
You're talking about the power, you know, this sort of vulnerability. There's the power imbalance and there's often not a lot of education on their rights. Is it a good idea for particularly younger employees to get parents involved to help?
They certainly can, and we do have parents advocating for their children, but a lot of workers contact us of their own volition. What they'll find is if they contact our information line number, there's some very friendly customer services officers there who will talk them through. They don't have to know everything. They just need to be able to say what they're doing, what they're working on, provide as much information as they can, and they will get assistance. But absolutely, their parents can advocate for their children if they wish to.
Are you aware of any delays in getting through that hotline? I've had a couple of people contact me and say their children call over and over, I suppose a bit like with Centrelink or any other big department. Is that a concern at all, or is that something you've had brought to your attention previously?
Look, it depends what time they call. We do have phone lines all over the country, so we have the ability to pick up, for example, across the country if someone's ringing in Perth and there's not anyone operating on the East Coast. So what I'd encourage them to do is to try. We don't have long queues, but we do have some queues. So as usual with any info line number, if they phone at sort of non-peak hours, they're going to have less trouble getting through. But we also have our website and they can contact us through that website as well. And that's just fairwork.gov.au. And there's a tip-off line there and they can leave a tip-off anonymously if they're concerned about coming forward.
So just to clarify, if you're listening today and you're a parent or an employee who is, you know, feeling like you're being underpaid and this could be wage theft going on, first port of call would be to look on the website and raise concerns with the employer direct. Failing that, go to yourself at the Fair Work Ombudsman Office.
That's right, and we welcome their call. And as I said, that number again is 131394, and there's also an anonymous line number that they can get through to if they wish to, and we also have an interpreter service, and they're welcome to phone us through that one as well, and that's 131450.
You've got a big job ahead of you, Sandra Parker. We wish you all the best with that.
Thank you very much.
Sandra Parker there, Fair Work Ombudsman. I can hazard a guess she's going to be busy today given the number of texts and calls we're getting about wage theft in this country. I've got Jeremy Thorpe with me, the PwC Chief Economist.
There are some organisations where it is a calculated ploy to not do right by their workers, and that should be treated, as was mentioned, by the full force of the law. But what we've seen is companies voluntarily coming forward saying, we actually got it wrong. No intention behind that. And often that's been brought forward, for example, by a change of an IT system or a payroll system. And when you change something, it highlights that maybe we weren't doing it correctly before. It's not uncommon for some industry awards to have over 10 separate rules that affect overtime accrual, for example. Penalty rates, annualised salary provisions. That's where you say, I think you're going to work a certain time over the year. We'll pay you more than that as a salary. But maybe over a couple of years, that salary is actually less than the actual time worked. Unless people keep on top of things in a highly complex environment where people are working overtime and there are roster shifts, for example, it's not a simple exercise. Now, that is not an excuse, absolutely, but it's easy to see how companies take their eye off the ball and that's where we get errors. But what's been positive to see, and I think the Fair Work Ombudsman herself said it, that what we're seeing is companies voluntarily saying we've got it wrong and we want to do right by the workers. So I think there are two separate buckets here. Now, the bucket with the non-intentional, We can fix that over time structurally. Award simplification, promotion of workers' rights as we're doing now. I think that will facilitate that fixing itself, and hopefully that is not a long-term structural problem. The issue of wage theft that's been mentioned, that is something we just need to stamp out.
Look, Jeremy, I'm just wondering, just lastly, how well do you think the Fair Work Ombudsman is coping with this? They've obviously been bombarded with all of these disclosures. Are they well equipped enough? Have they got the money? How are they going at policing this?
Oh, as was mentioned in the pre-record, you know, every regulator would love to have more resources, but I feel that they're at the time now where they're probably experiencing more call on their services just because companies are themselves coming forward. It's been interesting. A number of industry groups have certainly called for additional resourcing and funds to enable the Ombudsman to meet the full breadth of their legislative task. So it's not just on the workers' side coming forward. I think funding them appropriately is ultimately about doing right by the businesses and the companies and the individuals themselves. Again, hopefully this can be addressed by legislative reform and simplification, so we won't need to have as big an ombudsman. But at the moment, I imagine they're quite stretched.
Well, Jeremy Thorpe, PricewaterhouseCoopers chief economist, wrapping up that discussion. My big thanks to him for his time today.